Welcome to Success and Values. Let me begin with labor studies. So you're taking a labor studies class. I imagine a whole lot of you, probably the majority of you, are taking this class because you need GE credits. I understand that's how it goes. It's okay. No offense taken that you're here. Not because you know about the topic or are majoring in the program, but because you need some credit. That's how it always is. But I do think it's reasonable to explain a little bit what labor studies is and then how this course fits into that. So first of all, labor studies is the study of labor, and it could be or it could include the study of just working in general. And there are classes run within this program that consider what work is and what work has been historically. But labor studies also means the study of labor as a portion, the major portion, of the world's population or of a country's population. So labor as distinguished from management, as distinguished from ownership. So on the one hand, you have workers. On the other hand, you have managers and owners, right? So labor studies emerges out of the fact that there has been very influential, although increasingly weakened, labor movement in this country since, I don't know, the 1870s, 1880s at least, sort of peaking in a key way in the 1920s and 1930s, but also at that point becoming legalized and forming large bodies like the CIO, which were capable of pushing against management and against the government in significant ways, and were then legally realized and integrated into the New Deal era government, posing a problem for management, leading to honeymoon period of American labor in, or I guess a period of alleged affluence happening in the period between 1945 and 1970 or so. Arguably, that affluence in the United States was really only possible given that there was exploitation in the rest of the world. But at any rate, the labor movement then gets really backed off when neoliberalism begins, which I would point at the beginning of the 1970s, 1973, and so on. But anyway, labor studies exists because a labor movement exists. And labor studies is the attempt to understand the world from the perspective of working people, to understand the conditions of life for working people, and especially the conditions of work. The labor movement has been oriented towards the attempt to improve working conditions for working people, so more pay, less hours, better benefits, that kind of thing. Labor studies, in its most practical manifestations, has to do with thinking about how work works and what can be done about work in order to make it better for the workers. So within our labor studies program, there are a lot of very practical classes regarding things like labor law. And the people with whom I work in this program would very much like you to know, because we all know that most of you are in college because you understand or you believe that having this degree is going to land you a better job than the one that you've got now. The people in the labor studies program would like you to know that there is work to be had within the labor movement. There are jobs within unions, and there are jobs within other worker-oriented nonprofits. And so maybe it's a worthwhile thing to think about not just what is the sector and what is the job that can get you the most possible money while lining up with whatever skills and tendencies you have, but maybe you should also think a little bit about what jobs are right and what is the right thing to do for yourself and for your fellow workers, for regular people like you. What's the right thing to do? What can we do with our labor? What can we do with our work life that might be to the benefit of other people who are in situations like ours? And it's not even the case, actually, that labor jobs or union jobs pay worse than corporate jobs. Union jobs pay way better, for example, than my lecturer job that I'm getting paid for right now. Anyway, so that's labor studies, right? Like, it attempts to look at the world from the perspective of working people and working people engaged in wage relations, right? And that means that labor studies has to begin by recognizing that we live in a class society. We live in a society that doesn't just have one homogenous part, all Americans, but rather which has multiple parts or two key parts, the owners and their managers on the one hand, and the rest of us on the other. So it's a class world that we have to look at. Now, this class that we have right now, Success and Values, is a broader class. It fits into labor studies because it is concerned with the conditions of working people and the conditions of everyday people, and it's concerned with the mechanisms by which people like us are integrated into labor and into the accumulation of profit for corporations, for example. We are interested in these labor studies things, but the view of this course is as broad as possible, whereas certain labor studies classes are going to clue you into the details of labor law, for example. This class is supposed to make you think about the whole world, and specifically your everyday world, in terms of power, without ever forgetting that we're talking about power in a world where certain people own stuff and certain people don't. Certain people carry the guns and can shoot you on the street and other people don't, and so on. Okay, so success and values. What does that mean? I assume that when you hear that, it sounds kind of like what it sounded like to me when I was offered the class first a couple years ago. It sounds like a class about how to be successful and maybe what kinds of values do successful people have, such that if you want to be successful, you should have those values too. Like a kind of self-help class about, like, you know, succeeding. That is about the furthest thing from what the class actually is. This is a critical class, meaning that we are attempting not to accept structures and ideas and ways of life that have been offered to us as just the way that things ought to be. Rather, we want to look at our immediate context, including the key messages that we are given about what is good, about how we ought to live, about what we ought to do, about what makes a good person. We need to identify these immediate circumstantial values, the ones that are thrown at us by our schools, by our media, by our families, by our churches, by our employers. We need to question those things. So it's not a class about how to be successful. It's even a class that I will suggest to you that thinking about success and orienting your life path in terms of success is not a very reflective thing to do. And I would much rather you got real critical about the idea of success and started wondering whether it had much meaning at all. I'm not saying that you should live badly or that you should not have comfort or that your children should not be able to go to good schools and all this kind of stuff. And these are things I understand which are generally included under the heading of success. Rather, I really want you to think about what these standards are, where do they come from, and how does our, by our, I mean like working class people. Oh, and by the way, I'm making about the same amount of money that most of you make to do this teaching work that I do. I probably make about $20 an hour. I'm a lecturer. I get hired per semester. This is the case for 60 or 70% of your professors, wherever you go in this country. So we're working class too. My question is, for working class people, where does the idea of success come from? And when we follow that idea, when we determine our life paths on the basis of this notion of success, who is actually benefited by that? And I would say the answer to the question, who is benefited by that, is for the most part, the owners. For the most part, the corporations who profit from our labor, and not very much ourselves. Now, of course, there are all kinds of games and greeting card kind of things you can do with success and say, you know, success means different things to different people, and this is what success is to me. Yeah, okay, but I think, as some of our reading will probably confirm, there are basic ideas about success that we all agree on. We know what we mean. Success means, you know, making a decent amount of money and probably more money than your parents made. It means being highly placed within some institutional context and in line with that high placement, receiving a certain amount of social respect. That's what success is. And maybe like also being able to flaunt the symbols of success. So success is related to class and like moving up in terms of class. I think the brutal fact is that a whole lot of people live their lives aiming at success. Very few people become the utterly successful people that we see in the media all the time. The vast majority of people end up spending their entire lives in the wage relation. And the fact is that labor is becoming more and more and more precarious. And nevertheless, we think about success and talk about success and act on the basis of success, even though this alleged thing, a whole bunch of money, a whole bunch of respect, a high position, are really only going to come to a few. You know, beyond that, I think it's reasonable to ask the question whether making a whole lot of money, having the signifiers of success, and rising to some high position within an institution are actually the best things that you could ask out of life. What if it's the case that doing all that will erode your character? What if in order to succeed in those ways, you have to be utterly submissive in work environments for the entirety of your life? What if those people who rise to the highest positions within institutions are typically the ones who are most middle of the road and most willing to do exactly what they're told? So then we have a social hierarchy where we accord respect to people who are submissive and non-self-determining. Well, I don't want to accord respect to those kind of people myself, and I certainly would like to suggest that there are other standards by which we might determine who we are going to respect and not, and other standards that we might hold ourselves to. You know, what about being honest? What about working to develop community? What about working to develop our own capacities and those of our neighbors? What about working to increase the power that workers in general have over their working environments? This is the intention of a union. But there are other things that we can do beyond what you know as unions. I would say solidarity unionism is a deeper phenomenon. There are more things that we can do besides just joining the SEIU or whatever in order to increase solidarity among our fellow workers and to exert an influence upon the conditions of our work. You know, all these things are not success, and yet they are things that we could potentially value. So the question is, what do we value and why? And what's the best thing for us to value? Okay, so most broadly speaking, this class is a class about values and specifically the value of success. And it tries to look at physically and materially where and how these ideas are propagated and who they serve and how their serving of a particular portion of the society operates. So the general name for this study, really what we study in this class, is ideology. I would define ideology as consisting in dominant ideas, which everybody knows are true or everybody knows are valuable, like success, right? Like success is everywhere. If you look all over the campus, if you look when you're driving around town, when you're riding on the bus, if you look at the billboards, you'll see success everywhere. All kinds of things are sold to you under the heading of success, right? Like everybody knows that you live your life to be a success. Everybody knows that success is the good life. Everybody knows that success is happiness. That everybody knows part right there is a sign that we're dealing with ideology. And let me add to that. Ideology includes all of those notions that everybody knows, but that nobody thinks about. Nobody's asking, really, why are we talking about success? They might say, well, what is success for me? Because we have this kind of like individualized notion here. But people aren't asking, where did I get that idea? Now, the fact is that if you live in different places at different times, or if you look at people who live in different places at different times, they will be possessed by different dominant ideas, different ideological notions. If you lived in the United States, even in the, say, the 1930s, the notion of success, although it was around and it was propagated primarily by business people and preachers, it didn't have anything like the centrality that it achieves once we hit the neoliberal period in the 1970s and the 1980s. If you lived in the 1930s, you may well not have used that term ever in describing like what you thought you were really doing with your life. If you lived in the United States in the 1840s, you probably would never have even like thought of success as being anything except for just another word within the English language. So there are, at particular places, at particular times, there are certain ideas that are dominant. And there are certain ones which are typical of the United States too, right? So individualism, freedom, democracy. And these are things that everybody is supposed to understand. Everybody does think, thinking's not the right word, does believe that these are good things, right? Everybody, you know, okay, maybe that's an approximation. Vast numbers of people, the vast majority of people in this country have been trained through schooling primarily and through the media to accept the idea that freedom, democracy, individualism, and success are like great things, and that we already know what they are and that there's not really any question about them. So they are generally believed principles, principles that justify all kinds of things, but which are systematically not looked into. Now, of course, all kinds of things can be sold to us under the heading of freedom. They can sell you cars under the name of freedom, and they can sell you a war under the name of freedom. And the only way that that ideological notion really works is if you don't look into it. Now, for my part, the claim that we have a free society and a democratic society, I'm not convinced. Nor am I convinced that the dominant models of what freedom is, you know, like freedom isn't free, and like the idea that freedom is like you get your car on the road, and or freedom has to do with just being, you know, in the greatest country in the world, which is like a kind of thoughtless, almost circular statement. I don't believe any of that stuff, nor do I believe particularly that we have a democracy. But I do think that those things are really important, freedom and democracy. Individualism is an interesting one, too. So individualism is an ideological notion, right? This is something that is not has not always been called good in all parts of the world, right? Like in Soviet Russia, individualism was a vice. You know, if you like thought about yourself before anybody else, you're a bad person. In the United States, thinking about yourself before other people is like, well, that's what capitalism is, right? And it's generally understood that the United States is a place where individuals can come and succeed, right, and be free and take part in democracy. But you need to recognize that there are always relationships between dominant ideas and the actual practices happening where those ideas are prevalent. So individualism matches up with capitalist practice. In capitalism, each individual financial operator, business operator, is seeking their own profit. And the general ideology of capitalism and neoliberalism, which is today's version of capitalism, is typically that, you know, as Adam Smith said way back in 1776, even though everybody in capitalism pursues their own advantage, nevertheless, it comes about that this produces the best situation for everyone. That's the ideology of capitalism. It says that if you let the free markets go on, and if you let everybody just act for their own so-called interest, that the general good will be produced through this process. I think this is something that all kinds of things falsify. The 1929 stock market crash, the savings and loan crash, the 2008 crash, the general wave of neoliberal precaritizations, you know, the making of labor more precarious, the breaking of unions, the breaking of Detroit and Flint, Michigan. You know, these are all features of capitalism, and they are the things that happen when individual, so-called individual corporate financial operators are allowed to do what they want, right? So it's almost never the case that ideology is like true, but it has a function. If people believe that you're really in this for yourself, then they're going to live their lives that way, and they're certainly not going to offer much opposition to a system which is based on the same principle. So I think it lies upon us. We have the responsibility to think about these values and ask, you know, okay, how are we going to define them? Are we going to define them in the way that everybody understands, or are we going to engage in a radical critique of their alleged understanding and create something much more substantial for ourselves? Especially with regard to individualism, it seems that there is an opposite that we might well consider emphasizing over individualism, which is, I don't know, what do you want to call it? Communalism? Collectivism? You know, maybe what we actually need, and something that I can testify I definitely need, is real community. You know, this society, this capitalist society, breaks people down into isolated nuclear families, isolated individuals, ultimately just staring at their isolated little screens all by themselves, being tracked in every little gesture that they do, working more and more hours under more and more precarious conditions. How would you resist such an atomization? It could only happen through the composition of individuals together into stronger groups with greater powers. This is very basically what I would call solidarity unionism, too. So my basic point is that in this class, what we are looking at is ideology, that is dominant ideas, and especially the dominant ideas typical of our time and our place in the United States, in California, in Los Angeles. And we want to understand how those ideas relate to the socioeconomic and to a slightly lesser extent, political conditions in which we actually live. The Marxist thesis will be basically that ideology both veils, it hides what we're really doing, it makes us turn our attention away from our real conditions. You know, how many of you have parents who are working two or three jobs, right? But if you keep saying that America is the greatest country in the world, your attention is distracted from actual real heavy hardship. So ideology tends to veil what is really going on. It hides it behind a veneer of happy phrases, but it also tends to reinforce that, because a population that is convinced that capitalism is the only system that works, which is an ideological notion, we all know it, but we never think about it. If you are convinced that capitalism is the only system that works, then you're pretty clearly not going to involve yourself in attempting to oppose capitalism. So ideology doesn't just veil, it doesn't just reflect, but it also reinforces the practices in which we're engaged. So this is our problem. This is the object of our study. What is the relationship between structures, social, economic structures in particular, and dominant ideas? What is the functioning of those dominant ideas with respect to those structures? And what can we do to interrogate those questions and to interfere with those practices, or at least to make explicit what has been previously implicit? What has been like done and felt, but not actually thematized and spoken about. Let's try and identify what is really going on and start talking about what is really good for us, because I don't think that what's good for us is just to accept the phrases and ideas that have been crammed down our throats, particularly in school and particularly by the media, for the entirety of our lives. So that's what the class is about.